This is Bruce Silverman. Today we have a guest who has a new job, although she's not new in town. Her name is Vali Elke, and she is the new director of the Multnomah County Library System. Vali Elke, welcome to KABU.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
First of all, why did you become a librarian?
That's an excellent question. I went to library school because I thought I was going to be a teacher, and decided that wasn't quite the right route for me. Tried a few other things, and knew I loved the written word, knew I loved that environment, and that after having some conversations with some friends, decided that might be a good direction for me to go in terms of my career. So I went to library school and got my degree.
Okay, and you had a couple of two or more library jobs before you got on with Multnomah County. And you've moved up pretty quickly. Got on with Multnomah County in what year?
97, I believe.
You became director of Central Library downtown in what year?
Let's see, it was 2004.
Oh, that's a meteoric rise. You must be a star. And I know they like you here because I listened to a podcast of part of your interview process. It was a public meeting, and there were librarians there, and it sounded like quite the love fest.
Yeah, you could say that. I am very, very fortunate, I think, to have spent a good chunk of my career at Multnomah County Library, and that's allowed me to develop some really great relationships with the staff who I think respect me and the work that I do and whom I respect in turn.
Well, that's good. So you're familiar with the situation that you've put yourself in. What are we going to see new and different in this administration, in our libraries?
Good question. I get that question actually quite a bit. I would suspect that what we'll see new and different is going to depend a lot on what we see new and different in our community. I think if you've been paying attention, you'll see that there have been a lot of demographic changes in our community. They continue to change. We've tried to be really responsive to that in terms of our staffing, hiring folks who speak languages other than English, languages that are well represented in our community, like Spanish and Chinese and Russian and Vietnamese. And also our materials, making sure that they reflect the needs of those communities. So that, I think, will continue to change and grow as our community changes and grows. I think it's the 21st century where the library is in the information business. Technology has a huge impact on how we deliver our services and how people receive their information and interact with one another. I expect that as we move forward, this library system moves forward in that environment, we're going to see some changes around how we deliver services. We're already, you mentioned the podcast, you know, we're starting to record a lot of our programming and lectures and that sort of thing on and make them available via podcast for folks to download from the website. You know, we're looking at the possibility of providing some of our messages via text messages, which is such a, you know, ubiquitous form of communication now that I think people would appreciate that. So those things are sort of front and center. And then there's always, you know, new and different. It is also always dependent on the budget and where things stand with the economy. So we'll have to be making some hard choices, I'm sure, around that as well.
Yeah. With technology, is a stack of papers with ink on them glued together, is that going away? Books going away?
What's the $64 million question?
I think it was $64,000, but we've had inflation.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an excellent question. You know, I think what's you know, I could prognosticate till the cows come home, but I think what's likely to happen is that as things get more increasingly available in a digitized form, and as folks like, I'm going to make the assumption, folks like you and I, who enjoy the printed, tangible word, go away, and what becomes reality is a digitized environment, I think that's likely to change. I can't say, you know, how quickly or in what form or if it'll go away altogether, but I think it will change pretty dramatically in the next 10, 15, 20 years.
What is the budget in the current year for the county system? And the county system includes Central Library and how many branches?
We have a total of 17 locations, so Central and 16 branches, and then we're in the process of opening two new branches.
Mm-hmm. And what's the total budget in the current year?
I believe it's $57 million.
Okay, and next year?
Next year it's going to be around a little over $60
million. Oh, so it's actually going up?
Yeah.
That's unusual for government agencies these days.
Well, I think that reflects the two new branches. So when we passed our last levy, we built in money to pay for both the build-out. They're both leased facilities, so that'll include the cost for those facilities for building them out, and then also the staffing that we'll have to bring on board to staff those two new branches.
Okay, long-term, though, funding, even in good times, funding county government and library, well, capital needs, for example, people vote on, mm-hmm. If not the annual budget. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas? Are you satisfied with the way we fund the libraries?
Satisfied. Never satisfied. Right now, the way the library is funded is we get about 65% of our budget from the five-year serial levy. The remainder, for the most part, comes from the county's general fund. You know, some of it includes money that we get, private money that we get from the Library Foundation and other fines and fees, that kind of thing. Going out for a serial levy every 5 years has its advantages and disadvantages. The advantages are every 5 years we hear from the public, you know, if they're satisfied or not with, you know, the services that the library is providing. And we've been fortunate that we've been successful. And in fact, in our last levy, we had I think it was 63% approval on that levy, which is pretty, that's satisfying for sure. However, going out for a serial levy every 5 years is a lot of ramping up. You know, you can imagine you start a year or two in advance planning for the levy, raising money to conduct a campaign, energizing people in the community to get involved. And then there's the anxiety that I think staff experience having to go through every 5 years. Gosh, you know, is it going to pass? You know, and being all that kind of concern. So it definitely has its downsides. And then in addition, because there's this other portion that's funded by the county's general fund, that money, you know, is certainly impacted by the same sorts of economic forces that everything else is impacted. And so as they're cutting, that general fund contribution has the potential of getting cut as well. So there are other models out there that other library systems have looked at, like a specific library district. That's certainly possible, worth investigating. And in fact, It's been looked at several times over the course of the last 20 years in terms of Multnomah County Library. So there are definitely options. Neither one of those, I think, is ideal. They both have their drawbacks.
Oh, one expenditure in the library budget that I have to ask you about.
Absolutely.
How much are you paid?
I am paid $135,000 a year.
And how does that compare with your predecessor?
That was, I believe that's $3,000 a year less than she started at 5 years ago.
Okay. Some listeners may remember that just over 5 years ago, Molly Raphael was hired, and there was a bit of a controversy. Her negotiation, it's a one-on-one negotiation with the chair mm-hmm. of the county commission. People were not happy yeah. with the result of that negotiation. And I interviewed Molly Raphael here at KBOO at that time, right after that, and asked her about it, and she pointed out that if she had backed down, even though the public was calling, it was a big increase from the predecessor. If she had backed down, she felt she might never be able to get anything from her boss after that in the first negotiation. So she held the line, and that was an interesting argument. In your interview process with the public in this podcast, which we'll give the website later at the end of the program, there was one time, one issue where you use some rather strong language, and it had to do with space issues. Mm-hmm. I'm going to quote you. You said, "We have severe space deficiencies in our buildings." Mm-hmm. Want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Absolutely.
We've been building. In the mid-90s, the taxpayers voted $24 million mm-hmm. to heavily rehab Central, yeah. which had some structural problems and space problems, and to build several new libraries and add on to others and so on. Didn't we solve all the problems?
Yeah, don't we wish? That whole expansion wrapped up in 2004, and you're right. It not only renovated the Central Library, which was finished in 97, I believe, mm-hmm. But then renovated or built several new branches, badly needed renovations and expansions. It's interesting, Bruce. You know, this library system, Multnomah County Libraries, has the second highest circulation of any public library system in the country. And I say that to people, and I say, and that includes New York City, that includes San Francisco, that includes Chicago. The highest circulation is the Queens Public Library. They have three times the number of branches, three times the number of population that they serve, three times the space we have. And they, frankly, their circulation, I think, is only, it's less than a million higher than ours. It's pretty remarkable how hard our spaces and our staff work. It's true. We also, comparatively, have the smallest footprint of other public libraries serving the same size population.
Square footage.
You got it. So one of the stats that we like to throw out, because I think it really frames it for people, is that you could take all of our buildings, and I mentioned we have 17 locations. That includes the Central Library. And you could throw in our administration building, which is a really lovely office building over in Northeast.
You're saying that tongue-in-cheek.
And our two new branches that haven't opened yet. And all of that square footage would fit inside Seattle's main library.
They have a beautiful new main library designed by a world-renowned architect, and it's right downtown. And I don't know how it works for the people, but I know it looks good. I've seen it.
It's very iconic. It is beautiful. And I think it's certainly been controversial. I think people either love it or they hate it, frankly.
That probably has a lot to do with the architectural style, too.
I think you're absolutely right, Bruce.
Well, you say it's a severe problem. What can we do? What are you willing to do?
Well, you know, it's not as though I can wave a magic wand and suddenly we have larger buildings. We'd love to have larger buildings. We'd love to have a larger footprint in our community. The reality is we simply don't have especially in this economy, don't have the funds for that. So I think one of the things that we need to be thinking about is how can we work smarter. And as you may or may not know, with that circulation, that means all of those materials that are moving around our system are being handled individually by our staff. It's a very, very manual, labor-intensive process. We like to say that we move the contents of one of our the Holgate Branch Library, about 50,000 items around the system every single day. So it's busy and it's a lot of labor. Right now, none of those processes, with the exception, small exception of some of our self-check machines, none of them are automated. They're all done by staff. So one of the things that we're trying to look at is the possibility of how can we use technology to have the same staff we have to have the increasing circulation and movement of materials without killing ourselves. And so we're looking at what some of those possibilities might be. There are certainly systems all over the country and all over the world that have been pretty effective in addressing those demands. And I think that's one of the ways we're going to have to address the space issue. You know, part of the challenge is also just having space to do programs. You know, libraries are community centers, and that's really important to us to be able to provide that in the neighborhoods our libraries are in. And you know, our Hollywood Branch Library in Northeast Portland, busy, one of the busiest branch libraries in the country. They turn people away every day at their story times because they can't fit any more people into the meeting room. It's remarkable. So it's a blessing. We are thrilled that we're that well loved and that well supported. And at the same time, it raises some challenges for us, some of which we think we can meet, some of which we're just going to have to figure out how to deal with.
Okay. Another issue that I know is of concern to cable listeners, the USA Patriot Act has a clause, a part of it, that, as I understand it, requires libraries and librarians to answer, if asked by the federal government, I guess Homeland Security or maybe other agencies, to report what a citizen has been reading. And further, that you can't even confirm if a reporter like me asks you, whether you've been asked about, you know, in an investigation of somebody. In spite of that, I'm just going to ask you a question and we'll see how you answer. To your knowledge, has Multnomah County Library or any of its employees been asked such a question, and have they responded?
To my knowledge, no, but I can't answer that question even if we had.
Okay.
You know, we're definitely, it's a huge issue. I understand that it's important to KBOO listeners. It's as important, if not more so, to public libraries. That's a significant issue for us. And it is one that we have, as a profession, been very involved in trying to change. And in fact, they're revisiting that provision of the U.S. Patriot Act to try to exclude public libraries from that coverage. So we're hopeful that that'll change. I think with the new administration, it's likely to change.
You're listening to the KBOO Radio Zine. I'm Bruce Silverman, and I'm talking with the new director of the Multnomah County Library System, Vaily Elke. Free speech is definitely a librarian's issue. Another area of free speech is pornography. Mm-hmm. And folks can use computers in libraries to access pornography, and they do. Mm-hmm. The screens are such that if you're sitting next to someone, you can't see their screen unless you lean over or stand behind them. Mm-hmm. But some people are using mm-hmm. computers in these public libraries to access pornography. How do you feel? How does the staff feel? How does the public feel? I'm sure you've gotten feedback on
Absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. You know, it was a significant issue for us just generally. We use the privacy screens, as you mentioned. Recently, within the last 2 years, we've implemented a policy that's really been successful for us, which is we have a click-through agreement. So when someone uses a computer in our libraries, they sit down, they get an hour, and that's tracked by your library card number because you log in, and then we know you've had your hour and you can't go to another library and use it again. And so if you've used them, you'll remember that there's a little screen that pops up when you log in, and it has a bunch of text, and on that text, among the other things it says you can't do while you're using these computers, is it says if someone complains about what you're viewing, we will ask you to leave that site. And so what it does is, you know, pornography is free speech.
Mm-hmm.
And free speech is, no matter how a person feels about it personally, it's protected speech. And libraries feel pretty strongly about protecting people's rights to information. What we also are very concerned about is making sure that we are not creating a hostile work environment or public environment for the people who are using our facilities. So in this case, if someone were to complain about what you were looking at on your screen, they could talk to a staff person who would then go to the person and say, you know, as you recall, you agreed that you would comply with these rules while you're using these computers, and ask them to leave the site if they got a complaint.
So in the real world, what has been the reaction? Do most people comply, or do they say, I have my rights? Or
most people comply. I think generally most people recognize it's a public forum. You know, there are any number of people with different tastes and tolerances in that space, and it's been a fairly successful strategy for us.
You, the director of the library and the library as an institution, deal with many different stakeholders. Mm-hmm. The Library Advisory Board is something appointed by the county government. The Friends of the Library is a support foundation or a support organization. There is also the Library Foundation, mm-hmm. which maybe focuses a little more on raising money to support the budget. The county commissioners, your county bureaucracy, labor union. And I guess you've been active when you weren't a manager. Mm-hmm. You've been active in the union. How do you juggle all this? As the director, you're on the other side now, but you have to answer to all these people, and that's probably right. Mm-hmm. And there are probably others I haven't mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with
it's interesting. Actually, you know, it sounds, you list all those, and I think, holy cow, how does one deal with all that? But the truth is, at the end of the day, all of those people are really interested in the success of the library. And I think if we can operate from that, knowing that, well, maybe our strategies for getting there might differ, or we might have slightly different agendas. In the end, the people who are really engaged, for instance, the people who volunteer their time to serve on the advisory board, that's a significant commitment. The Friends of the Library, who spend all sorts of hours organizing the book sales and meeting and that kind of thing. And the same with the foundation. It's remarkable to me that people are willing to give that kind of time to the library. So while they're not always all pulling in exactly the same direction, at the end, knowing that everyone's really interested in the best outcome from the library makes it a little easier to negotiate.
In your background, you have studied specifically the relationship between public libraries and school libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not too long ago, I read a report, and I don't have kids in the schools here, so I don't know what the libraries in the schools are like, but there was a report, which was news to me, that the libraries in the Portland public schools are hurting. They're not in good shape.
Yeah.
Some of the libraries don't have a trained librarian on duty.
Many of them do not.
Yeah. Do you see a stronger relationship? Can you help them? Can they work with you? You see, what do you see for the future?
We, you know, I would say that historically we've always been a huge ally support for school librarians, school libraries. Just naturally, we have a lot of programs that work in the schools to provide library services. We have programs that help kids get ready to learn. We have a pretty significant early literacy program, and those folks are all about making sure that once a kid gets to school, he or she is reading where they need to be reading, that their parents have the skills to help them, you know, be prepared to learn, that kind of thing. And then with the schools formally, we have a couple of outreach programs that work with the media specialists and teachers in the schools and over the course of summer. So we already put a lot of energy and time into supporting those, into supporting schools. You know, we're a county agency, so we actually have 8 different school districts within our service area. And then we also service all of the private schools and that kind of thing. So it's our challenge is to make sure that we're providing the services that all of those folks need while within our resources. So they're a great partner for us. You know, our individual librarians in the neighborhood branches typically know their local librarian or whomever is staffing the library, has relationships with them, and makes sure that they are in communication about what programming is happening and how they might support one another. We definitely are connected to the superintendents in the area, and if they need some advocacy, if we can provide that, we're happy to do that, because you know their success is the community's success.
Are you aware of locations where the libraries, the public library system, actually operates the libraries in the schools, and would you consider that here?
You know, if we had, again, if I had a magic wand and had infinite resources.
Well, they're more broke than you are, I think.
Well, but we're not. Yeah, I think we're not that rich either.
Yeah.
There have definitely been models. You know, we had a model at a time in which we operated a public library in a school library. It's interesting, that report you mentioned that I worked on some time ago. We did a lot of research of those sorts of hybrid library systems. And what we found was that, in general, where those are successful is when people don't have another alternative for their public library access, that generally adults are not comfortable walking into a school to get their library service. And that's just, you know, you can make judgments about that, but that has been sort of the reality. There are definitely, Nashville just recently, the Nashville mayor, asked the Nashville Library to look at the possibility of taking over coordination of the schools. I spoke with some folks there, and they said, I said, so are you just going to do that? She said, well, no, that needs to be money that comes with that, because that's a huge responsibility. So there, you know, there are certainly models where people are looking at that.
Administrators of large bureaucracies like the library and like the Portland Public Schools and others don't tend to stay around for too long. Your predecessor was here for just about 5 years. She had actually retired, as I understand it, from her previous job.
She had from Washington, D.C.
And then, yeah, and applied for this and got it and stayed 5 years. How long are you going to stay with us?
As long as they'll have me. I love Portland. I love this community. I love the Northwest.
I will say, for those, obviously people can't tell on radio, but you're younger than your predecessor.
Yeah, you know. Indeed.
She's. I hope she's happy in her retirement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so as long as they'll have you.
And, you know, who knows?
You wouldn't move to Queens or Brooklyn, I guess, is a good library system. And that's where the previous one went, I believe,
right.
Jenny Cooper.
Jenny Cooper went to Brooklyn and then to D.C.
Oh, where Molly Raphael
exactly.
was.
Exactly. It's all sort of
I see it. Yeah. It's all connected.
It is. No, my goal right now is to do the best job I can do with this. I feel really strongly about how important this organization is to the success of this community, and I feel very, very lucky to be in the position I'm in right now. Very happy.
Okay. Well, good luck with it.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Vaily Elke, new director of the Multnomah County Library System. And spelling doesn't usually count on radio, but if folks want to look my guest up on Google or elsewhere, let's have you spell your name.
The whole thing?
First and last name, yes.
I like to say, and this is an old tagline at this point, but it looks worse than it sounds. So the first name is V as in victory, A-I-L-E-Y. The last name, which is worse, is O-E-H-L-K-E.
Okay. And you can look up Vaily Elke on Google, as I did. Also, you can, hear her talking more about what she would do in the job that she has now gotten. Part of her hiring process, there was a public interview, which is available as a podcast on the library website, which you should know by now, but if you don't, it's never too late to start reading and using the library. It's multcolib.org. That's multcolib.org. Billy Elke, I want to thank you very much for coming into KBOO, and maybe we'll have you back, and we can just talk about books that you've been reading. I didn't ask you that. I should right now. It's never too late. What are you reading right now? Reports, I bet.
The book that I'm just finishing, well, I should say I'm in the middle of, is Julian Barnes' recent memoir called, and I always forget the name of it. Somebody asked me this question the other day. Nothing to be frightened of or nothing to be afraid of. And it's generally around the death of his mother, but the larger issue is death and afterlife and people's beliefs around that. So he's an amazing writer.
Okay. I guess you probably read some fiction and some nonfiction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the nonfiction. And I haven't read any fiction of late. I read a lot of poetry. I have some favorite poets, Mary Oliver and Molly Peacock and Gary Snyder. And I read a lot of magazines and I read a lot of newspapers.
Okay. Billy Elke, thank you very much for coming on KBOO Radio.
Thank you, Bruce.